Welcome back into Upon Further Review. Time for another Turn Left Thursday. Trevor Mader, Jacob Blair talking all things going on in the racing world. And we recap another entertaining race at the Kansas Speedway and take a look ahead to the cutoff race of the round of 12 at the Charlotte Roval. And Jacob, first off, looking back at what we saw on Sunday at Kansas, a race at Kansas Speedway never disappoints, does it?
Yeah, it's rare where even the quote-unquote bad races are sometimes pretty decent. And then, you know, you get a race of the year candidate out of the fall Kansas race this year. You know, it was a good race, you know, through most of the event. There was a lot of, I felt like there was a lot of passing. You could move different places. Well, you also saw a car kind of dominate in the 11 of Denny Hamlin. And then ultimately you get late in the race, you get some late race cautions, you get a little bit of chaos, but nothing that really cost anybody in the playoffs too much. Just chaos in a good way per se, where everyone up front stayed up front, but you just got an incredible finish that really does make this race all in all from start to finish a race of the year candidate.
Yeah, obviously the finish itself is going to be what grabs a lot of attention, you know, with Denny Hamlin, Bubba Wallace, Christopher Bell all racing each other really hard, and then Chase Elliott and Chevrolet kind of stealing one. But Jacob, I'm in the belief, I think if you take out the fantastic finish, I still think this was a good race. Would it be a race of the year type candidate like you're saying? Probably not, but I will say, as somebody who was there watching in person, I don't know how it looked on TV because I wasn't watching on TV, but you know, there was really good racing all across the track, and like I said, this just kind of speaks to, you know, for my money, Kansas Speedway is a top five track right now.
Yeah, for someone that did watch this race on TV, unable to make it out there this past weekend, I thought they did a good job of, if the battle for somewhere inside the top five, whether it was the leader, second, third, if that fizzled out or if that got strung out, they went and found somewhere else, whether it was, you know, mid-teens, whether it was the back half of the top 10, where they were racing hard and there were constantly battles to go to. It wasn't one of those races where everybody gets single file and then you got to kind of make something out of it with the commentary. They could just bounce around at any given point. A lot of times it was different playoff drivers. You saw, you know, throughout the day, the Penske cars, as we kind of maybe expected, struggled, but they're still racing hard further back in the field. They could jump to them. You could just jump different places, whether it was non-playoff drivers. So there was always somewhere to go. And, you know, we talk about a lot of places maybe not deserving of two races. It's really a hope that Kansas continues to get two races in the future, simply because of the product it puts on the racetrack. You know, we've seen Darlington get a second race. It used to be a one race a year for so long, and everyone enjoyed the racing there so much, they end up giving that track a spring race. Now there's two races a year at Darlington. So hopefully Kansas can stay on the schedule for two races, ultimately just because it does produce such a good product.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. One, you mentioned, you know, the Penske cars. They actually, you know, being there and being able to watch everything, they had a little bit of speed. They had probably 5th to 10th place cars. I know Joey Logano got caught up in an accident. Ryan Blaney was in a spot where he was going to come out of that final pit stop, I think 3rd or 4th, got caught speeding on pit road. I don't know if he was going to win, but he could have been in the mix when it was all said and done. Also, to, you know, your point on the product that Kansas puts out there, race of the year, I don't know. Atlanta was phenomenal earlier this summer. Bristol was chaotic. I also think that the Daytona cutoff race was pretty good, but this was the bare minimum. You know, you throw in the 600 as well. This, the bare minimum, was a top five race this past weekend. And, you know, Denny Hamlin leads a good chunk of it. He had the car to beat. It really felt like the best three cars all day, in my opinion, were Toyotas, with Denny Hamlin, Christopher Bell, and Bubba Wallace. That caution comes out. You know, Denny Hamlin has a slow pit stop. He's going to start 7th. Bubba Wallace and Christopher Bell are up front. They are racing hard. We get another caution with Zane Smith rolls. That creates a, you know, an overtime green white check, or whatever you want to call it. And of course, all mayhem breaks loose. Bubba Wallace and Christopher Bell racing hard. Bubba kind of crowds Bell, takes him out of it. Denny Hamlin gets a big run. They're battling for the lead. Denny Hamlin does what he did, and, you know, races Bubba extremely hard, crowds him, you know, and basically puts him in a predicament where he's going to have to lift. He's not winning the race with the predicament Denny Hamlin puts him in. They make contact. Chase Elliott comes by, and after Toyota dominates the day, you know, Chevrolet steals the victory. Jacob, there's many layers to this. First off, the finish itself was super exciting. I guess let's start there. Another awesome finish at Kansas.
Yeah, it you know, you see late race cautions, or even, you know, we've seen this before with whether it's late race cautions, whether it's strategy, where you just get, whether it's two or three, or in this case, five or six drivers that are able to just go so many different places on the racetrack that it just produces this. You get the progressive banking, which kind of leads to this as well. We're able to roll the top and make it difficult on the car below you. And we saw that with the different strategies here. You get a late race caution, and a lot of them, I think it was the top eight at the time, all took two tires, most of them being Toyotas. Denny Hamlin has a bad pit stop, was leading, comes off, I think, in the seventh position. And then Chase Elliott is the first driver that takes four tires, and he's back there in the ninth position, ninth or tenth back there. So it really set up where you had all of those different layers, and then as drivers started crowding and moving, it opened up gaps. You know, Chase Elliott, if you had the opportunity or have the opportunity to watch the onboard, passes like 10 cars on the final restart. It wasn't, he was, hey, I'm running fourth and get by everybody. He had to make moves just to get in position and take advantage of everything. So a pit call that worked out. I'm not going to say it was necessarily the right pit call, because if the Toyotas don't run each other out of room, I don't think Elliott gets there, but he was in position to take advantage of it. You have the opportunity to win a race. And I know a lot of people, and maybe question what Denny Hamlin did, especially having some issues with power steering, which is just another layer to this. As he said, he's going for the win, and at that point, he's the driver of the 11, not the owner of the 23 car. Now, there's a lot of debate on whether he should have or should not have done that, and you know, the 23 is basically in a must-win situation and would have benefited from the win. So just an incredible amount of layers and story to tell all within the matter of about two laps, which is what made this finish so incredible.
Yeah, and, you know, let's dive into, you know, the finish itself with Toyota and how they bungle that whole thing. And, you know, Christopher Bell had I thought he was in the best spot going into that restart, because Hamlin had the slow pit stop. Bell had a better car than Bubba all day. Bubba's able to fend him off, and him and Denny Hamlin get to battling, and they do what they do there. Jacob, I'm kind of with you. You know, I don't think anybody did anything wrong per se. You know, they were all fighting for the win. They're all in a spot where if you win, you automatically move on to the next round. You know, Denny Hamlin's in a good spot points-wise with, you know, not winning on Sunday, but it's no secret he's not the best road course racer. He hasn't had the best luck at the Roval. There's no guarantee that he gets through to the next round if he doesn't win. You know, he said, I'm going to race, you know, when I'm in the 11 car, I'm going to race the cars that I own just like I would anybody else. And let's be honest, Jacob, if Denny Hamlin on that final lap is just throwing blocks left and right, trying to get Bubba, you know, trying to help Bubba Wallace win, everybody would take issue with that.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it was kind of a no-win situation, quite honestly, for the 11. You know, in order to make that pass, he's going to have to crowd the 23. Maybe he could have given a little bit more room, but he has to crowd him. We've seen that, you know, at Kansas, that's how you win mile and a half races. It's difficult to complete the pass off the corner, and you got to make it difficult on the car on the outside. And if, you know, you just let them go, then it's, you know, race fixing or whatever you want to call it. So it's a difficult situation, but ultimately, you know, the 11 has their own partners at the team. You know, you've got your crew guys, you've got to go out there and make the decision you've got to make for your team. I think the one big thing to take away from this is, if say this is a, you know, Saturday night dirt track, you know, and just kind of go through that methodology where nobody has teammates, nobody has manufacturers. As you said, nobody did anything wrong. The only reason we are debating this and talking about if anyone did anything wrong is because you have teammates, because you have manufacturer alliances where, you know, you want to help Toyotas win. You don't want to let a Chevy win when Toyota's got five cars in the top five and you let the Chevy win. We aren't talking about that if that doesn't exist. So, you know, ultimately, as you said, nobody did anything wrong. It's just hard racing for the win. And the only reason we're really debating it is because of team alliances and allegiances and manufacturers.
Yeah, give me that finish any day of the week. I will take this over, you know, us talking about, well, you know, Denny Hamlin just let Bubba Wallace win, because that would create a whole nother topic probably in itself. The other side of this, Jacob, Chase Elliott gets his second win of the year. He locks himself into the round of eight. I think we both maybe had him not making the round of eight. Chase Elliott's had, you know, he had speed the better part of like the first 20 plus races, just hadn't had the wins, but he had consistency, maybe had some bad luck, you know, at Richmond and Bristol. Now he gets a win in a very un-Chase Elliott way, right? Like, this isn't normally how Chase Elliott wins races. He usually has one of the better cars and wins, and he stole one, for lack of a better word, very Alex Bowman-like on Sunday. How big of a win is this for Chase Elliott, and does this solidify him again as a contender when it comes to the round of eight?
I don't know necessarily if the win itself does, but I think the day as a whole. You know, you look at the total points haul, it's 55 points, five or I guess 6 points now with the fastest lap point off of a perfect day. Denny Hamlin was the only driver to get more points at 56. So what that means is not only did he win the race, he was running up front all day long. We talk about him coming from 10th, but that's because of the pit call strategy to get fourth. He was about the only car all day that seemed could really hang with the Toyotas. It was a Toyota dominant race. And then there was Chase Elliott, who led a total of 24 laps. He had runs up front inside the top five, was really the only car non-Toyota to do that. So there's not only did it, you know, work out and maybe, you know, the C's part got a little bit lucky to win the race, he was there and had the speed all day. I think that's the bigger talking point for the nine of Chase Elliott, is if you're able to finally find ways to win races, and we talk about with this a lot of driver talk about this with a lot of drivers. What separates, you know, the good ones from the great ones are, it's easy to win a race when you're dominant. It's harder to win a race when maybe you aren't dominant and you have to put yourself in position to win races you probably shouldn't win. That's something we don't see a lot from Chase Elliott, to get that and maybe show the team himself that, you know, you put yourself in a good spot, you'll find a way to win races. I think it does put them back in the conversation. I think what also puts them there is there's a lot of concern for, you know, at least the 24 car William Byron, someone who we thought was a favorite. They've just, this playoff run, I know he winds up ninth, but it's been a struggle for that 24 car. So to me, it almost seems like the 9 and the 24 have kind of switched in the discussion when we talk about who's going to make the championship four.
Yeah, and Chase Elliott was the best non-Toyota all day. You know, he was probably going to be a fourth or fifth place car. Now you look at the playoff pictures. We head to the Roval, the cutoff race for the round of 12. Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott have locked themselves into the round of 8 with wins. You've got Kyle Larson, who is 54 points to the good. Pretty much all he has to do is start on Sunday. Denny Hamlin in a good spot, 48 to the good. Christopher Bell, 44. William Byron, 40. Ryan Blaney, I mentioned, clinched, as is Chase Elliott. Chase Briscoe is 21. Joey Logano, 13. And on the outside looking in, Ross Chastain, 13 out. Bubba Wallace, 26 out. Tyler Reddick, 29 out. Austin Cindric, 48 out. Jacob, I think it's safe to say everybody but Ross Chastain that's on the outside is probably in a must-win. You know, Tyler Reddick's a good road course racer, and he's had speed there. Maybe if Joey Logano has issues, maybe Tyler Reddick's able to snag enough points to where he doesn't have to win. But it really feels like that, you know, six guys are clinched. Chase Briscoe would have to have a pretty bad day to not make it, and Joey Logano just has to have a decent day to make it.
I think here's where we're in a very similar situation around one, where if there's no winner outside that top eight, so 9th through 12th right now, one of those drivers doesn't win, everybody in on points is probably your drivers that'll get in on points. One thing about the Roval is we don't see in road courses in general, we talked about the points hauls with Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, 56, 55. We don't see those types of numbers with the Roval because drivers choose to either get stage points or they choose to get good finishes. So you see that the high points being closer in that 40 range. That's been a big talking point this week, is it's really hard to make up a lot of points at the Roval because no one really gets a lot of points. So what that does is it puts everybody in a must-win situation. So if there's no new winners, I think everybody inside the top eight is safe, unless you just have a disastrous day, and that even includes Joey Logano at plus 13. Where this gets interesting is if someone outside, so say a Tyler Reddick, who you mentioned is good at road course races, is leading. That's where this gets interesting, when he's able to bump himself in. We saw this at Kansas with Bubba Wallace leading with the live points. It moves Joey Logano out. It puts Chase Briscoe right on the cut line. And then at that point, William Byron, Christopher Bell, Denny Hamlin, they're only 20 to the good. So a bad day then puts you in points jeopardy to move down. So it'll be pretty simple if there's no new winner. But if Tyler Reddick or Ross Chastain, Austin Cindric, Bubba Wallace, if one of those four is able to run up front and contend for a win, it's going to make everything a lot more difficult for everyone else.
Yeah, and like I said, it feels like probably the only guy outside right now that could maybe points race his way in is Ross Chastain being 13 out. You know, Tyler Reddick's probably in a must-win. And that's probably how they approach it going into Sunday. All right, Jacob, so in these season-long standings, you have beat me, I believe it's each of the last 3 weeks. So you lead 17-14. I get the first pick at the Roval. I'm not overthinking this. It's a road course. I don't care about the playoff picture. I'm taking SVG, and I'll let you figure out who you want to pick to finish second.
I will take SVG as well. I know I can't, so I'll figure this out. But that's the obvious pick. That's what also kind of makes this difficult is, for the drivers outside the top nine, is not only do you have to win, you got to go find a way to beat Shane Van Gisbergen on a road course, which we've not seen really done this year. I think you get Austin Cindric maybe playing a role. Tyler Reddick maybe playing a role, but I'm going to go outside the playoffs as well. know he's not been quite as fast on road courses, but you know, he's generally been, the Roval's been one of his better road courses. I'm going to go the 16 of AJ Allmendinger to play spoiler this week, since SVG's off the board. Really good at the Roval, and I just don't think anybody beats SVG, so I'll go out on a limb a little bit with the 16.
I like it. By the way, he won at the Roval a couple years ago today, AJ Allmendinger. In terms of playoff drivers, Chase Elliott obviously is really good there. Kyle Larson has won there a couple times. Christopher Bell has won there. Tyler Reddick's always fast. William Byron always seems to have a top five car. I would think if it's not SVG and it's a playoff driver, the winner is going to come from one of those. But we're both going road course ringers. I'm taking SVG. Jacob is taking AJ Allmendinger. We'll be back next week to recap the Roval and take a look ahead to the round of eight. More upon further review on the way next.